Ladies and gentlemen, turn up your radios. If you are in your car, turn it up. Browner and Lawhead is coming to you live on the Mitre 1090. Live, it's a live sound. It's a live sound. I'm John Browner. I am joined by Jason Lawhead. You can find us on YouTube under Kaplan and Crew. You can find us on every platform that hands out podcasts. We're on there as well under Kaplan and Crew. I'm John Browner, like I said before. And Jason, what's up, brother? Jason Lawhead joins me.
Oh, man, it's a little melancholy, you know. This is the last show of the week. I get a little kind of down, I looking forward to it. A lot to talk about, not enough time to do it in, so let's jump in it.
We are always going to start this show with winners and losers. Winners and losers is basically the best thing that happened last night and the worst thing that happened last night. Depending on the person, it could be anything, okay? The winner from last night is you and me, okay? We all won last night because normally somebody thinks of national games being televised as a regional thing where only people care about it. Last night was a great game. Whether you hate the Yankees or you love the Red Sox, I found last night's game to be highly entertaining. Now, I don't know if this is me getting caught up in postseason drama. I don't necessarily know if this is me not realizing how tense a every out counts baseball game is. But I found myself really locked into last night's game. And I got to say, man, I was shocked. So I hope all of you were able to intake what I intook last night and enjoyed a little high-level baseball where it feels like every out absolutely meant something between the Yankees and the Red Sox in the game in which the Red Sox actually won the game. So that's my winner, us.
Yeah, that's a great point. And not just, you know, the at-home fan. It's that game was for the fans. After last year, them being in the bubble, even though they expanded the playoffs and it was exciting to watch on TV, much was last night, even in a, you know, more of a, you know, it was a lopsided score, but it felt closer than that with some of the things that went on during that right. game. And you know, but all in all, it was exciting to see Fenway Park in a frenzy like that, in a playoff just absolute. And then the early home run just set a fan tone that never settled down. And it was truly the closest 6-2 game I've ever kind of felt. And maybe a lot of that had to do with fans being back and being engaged into the television set. So, yeah, here on that as a winner for us, not just the TV viewer, but hopefully
I think not having fans and then – because last year, obviously, baseball playoffs were kind of weird because it was like a smattering at the – even at the end, it was fans, but not really.
Right.
I think we forgot what it feels like to fill up a traditional stadium like Fenway Park with two historical teams and have them duke it out. Like the fact that I think it was Aaron Judge, or no, it was Carlos Stanton, looks to have smashed a home run in the first inning. And the announcer goes, "That ball is gone." Wait, what did I get wrong? Why is he at first base? Like,
legendary Donald Sterling or Alan Sterling.
Whoa. Donald Sterling is legendary for a different
David reason. Sterling. His last name's Sterling. The Donald
Sterling name, Silver.
Yeah, he and he's legendary. He's the guy that the Yankees win. That's him. I mean, so many fun, exciting, unpredictable little things like that. And the crowd had so much to do, probably even with his call, right? Like,
right.
And during the year, these guys, if you were the road broadcaster, Major League Baseball's policy was still you stayed back and you watched it in New York with a team of, right. you know, monitors to do your part of the broadcast. Well, he was in Fenway yesterday. They Fenway invited, they lifted all that. So the opposing, I don't know if that's going to be, I haven't read up if that's going to be in every ballpark in October, if the opposing broadcast teams will actually be on site in the park. So that'll be interesting because it adds a little extra flavor. And you're right. Like, yeah, fans were back during baseball season this year, but baseball is such a laissez-faire kind of attitude anyway that you never get that kind of intensity. You might get an eighth inning or ninth inning where some fans stand up and they're clapping on two strikes. But that crowd out of the gate, man, it was
fired up.
Yeah, and it was fun to just watch and to get the energy off of. And great night for baseball. And hopefully that's a kind of precursor for everything we're going to see this month in October with all the matchups that are coming.
On the show, obviously, once we've taken care of our house cleaning, being winners and losers, on today's show, we've got power rankings and we've got buy or sell. But we're going to mix buy or sell up on the second half of the show. And I hope you guys stick around for that because I think we're going to add a little twist to it. I think you guys are going to like. But every Wednesday, we're supposed to give you one thing. But because yesterday Urban Meyer absolutely hijacked our show, thanks, Urban, we're going to bring you something else. We're going to give you Tuesday's edition on Wednesday of Power Rankings. That's right. We're going to give you our look going into the weekend of what we think the top five teams in the NFL are. I'm going to start off with my number five team being the Buffalo Bills. Mm. Now, I know the Bills are destroying people. I get that. I'm not convinced. I know that they've been dominant in wins in the league where, according to who you ask from in Vegas, it's basically a 3 to 4 point difference between every team. I get that. I'm not buying the Bills. I know everyone loves the Buffalo Bills. Not this guy. Not sold on them, but I respect them enough to put them in my top five. They're five. The Buffalo Bills.
Well, I had them at one last week for a lot of the reasons you've cited, and I'll talk about where they are on my list down the road. But for now, my number five is the Ravens. They creep in at five only because, and now, look, at the end of the day, there could be I don't have the Chiefs in there right now because I know that the Chiefs don't feel like they're the team that they should be right now. So even though I know the Chiefs are dangerous and they're going to have something to say, I like the Ravens at five for where they started coming out of training camp with all the questions and all the injuries and how, you know, kind of bad they looked against the Raiders in week one. And they've had to, yeah, sure, steal one against Detroit. But last week going into an undefeated Denver, they really kind of look like the team that they do many years when we doubt them and they get stronger as the season goes on. And I think that, that's why they're in my number five. A bit of a surprise for some maybe, but for now, 4 weeks in, that's my five.
At number four, for me, the Packers. Aaron Rodgers gives you a level of consistency. I know the first week was abysmal. But Aaron Rodgers gives you a sense of a feel of consistency that you can only find in one or two other places. One of them is in Tampa with Tom Brady. The other one for me is in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers. And you guys know how much I hate Green Bay. And giving them credit for anything just literally makes me want to throw up when I'm done doing it. But I always give credit where credit is due. And whatever happened in week one, they've absolutely righted that ship. And it seems as if they picked up right where they left off last year and they're cruising to another NFC championship game. So Green Bay, you're my number four team.
My number four is going to be another newcomer to my list, which was also number five was a newcomer and I've bumped two teams. So my number four and probably the team that's probably trending the most upward is the Chargers. What they've been able to do and what they've been able to prove, going to Arrowhead and finishing off that team the way they did in the manner they did it, which was in the past, the Chargers would have found 10 different ways to lose that game. You know that. We all know that, right? But they didn't. They found a few different ways to win that game. And that was impressive. They come back home, once again, playing against a road team that had the home crowd. And on Monday night against the 3-0 Raiders, they really looked impressive. So I like the Chargers at four and trending upward as long as they keep doing this.
You know, it's funny. We're going to get the two teams you talked about later in my power rankings. But number three, for me, the Chiefs. I know the Chiefs are dropping out of people's list. I know the Chiefs record-wise doesn't look pretty, but I've watched the games. I really have. I've watched the games, and this week they're up against Buffalo, my number five team. They don't look any different than anything they did last year. It just seems that they've lost a couple of games that they won last year. I don't expect for that trend to continue, and I honestly think no one can stop that offense. And the losses that they've gotten early in the season, I think Andy Reid needed those to kind of snap guys back into a mental space of, we're still hunting. Yes, we were in the Super Bowl. We didn't win it. And I think a lot of those guys in that locker room may have been feeling that way. Then, and with the addition of Josh Gordon going forward, who knows what the NFL is going to let him do. But with the addition of Josh Gordon, with Tyreek Hill, added to everything else that they have, Travis Kelce, et cetera, et cetera, I really don't see, if Josh Gordon comes in and it's 50% of the Josh Gordon we remember, this offense is going to take a leap into a level in the stratosphere that we haven't seen. So I'm putting the Chiefs at number three.
Okay. All right. I'm going to go Packers. Packers were my five team last week. They've moved up to three. To echo a lot of what you said, when you have Aaron Rodgers, and it looks like that first week was just an offseason distraction. We kind of like, you know, it was a different approach than what the Ravens had to go through in week one. But I'm kind of seeing the same kind of trends where you go, well, these guys are going to have a lot to say when it comes down to the nitty gritty in their conference for the championship. And the way the Packers, against that division that they're in, it looks like, you know, they're going to be able to kind of mow through that part of it. So at 3-1 with three straight wins, I got the Packers at number three.
Number two is going to upset some people, but I don't care. Because number one ain't going to upset nobody. I bet not hear no back talk about number one. But number two. Number two going to upset some people. San Diego Chargers. The Los Angeles Chargers are my number two team in the power rankings. And you know why? And you know why? Justin Herbert. That's it. That's the story. There's no other reason. That guy has got them at number two. I'm watching greatness. I can tell you right now, certain things, certain talents overcome certain issues. And Scott said something from Kaplan and crew early, maybe it was today or maybe it was yesterday, that Justin Herbert, the things people are saying about Justin Herbert, they were saying about Phillip Rivers, his second year. And I got to tell you, man, we ran out of time on the show to talk about this. But no, they're not. Not like this. Not like this. Okay. Phillip Rivers never threw a ball that looked anything like Justin Herbert at all. That's a classic statuesque thrower of the football back there. Chargers are my number two team. Jason, who you got?
Number two, was my one last week, which is the Bills. And they're only sliding to two based on who my number one is going in. But, you know, I know you say you're not sold on them. I just think right now they are the team that probably, when you look at the whole landscape, all things being equal, staying healthy on both sides of the ball with what they've got right now. And this is going to be a big game to shuffle up the power rankings when they've got the Chiefs this week. But I just see with the way things are, Buffalo's probably going to finish with the best record in the AFC. I got them at two.
This is why I'm still not on the bus for Buffalo. Here are their wins. They beat the Dolphins 35-0. The Dolphins are a dumpster fire at this point. They beat the Redskins 43-21. Also, dumpster fire at this point. And then they shut out the Texans 40-0. Dumpster fire at this point. That sounds like what the Broncos did to get to 3-0. Am I wrong or am I right?
Well, the Broncos weren't scoring any points. And they were giving, you know, it was 23-13, 17-10, yes, something like true. That. I mean, I get your sentiment, Browner, but I gotta disagree here. With the point is, it is hard. I don't care how bad of a football team is. You can look at the Jacksonville Jaguars or the Detroit Lions. It's hard to shut out a football team in the NFL, and to do it twice in 3 weeks with scores like that. It's not like you're looking at a 10-0. Oh, this game was in bad conditions, and neither team could. I mean, 40-something-0 and 30-something-0. These are big blowouts. The Redskins aren't as bad as a dumpster fire as you may think. They're at 2-2, I believe. I mean, obviously, I'm not going to grace them with any upper echelon type team in the league. But they dismantled these guys. You take away the fourth quarter against Pittsburgh, which was all just blunders, giving the they are a plus 101 against their opponent in 4 weeks. That is staggering, and that's why they're in my number two and why I see them going forward as the best record in the AFC.
I give you that it's difficult to win a game in a week-to-week league. I 100% agree with you. But the team they also lost to appear to be terrible too. But you can only play the teams you got on your schedule. You can only play the teams you got on your schedule. And thankful for me, this Sunday, they got the Chiefs. Number one, and I don't really think this is much of a debate.
Yeah, I think we're pretty – we Cardinals. Haven't even prepped this show, and we know ours are the same.
It's the Cardinals. Like, listen, watch the tape. Watch the games. Watch the highlights. Watch NFL Live. Any NFL publication that releases a power ranking, that releases a standings, you can't really do that, but releases any type of opinionated standing, and the Cardinals are not number one, that standing is invalid. They are the only undefeated team, and they are the only team that have found ways to win, and then when it came with the bright lights, they blew out a team that everybody was on the jock of. So the Cardinals, to me, number one.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, if they're not your number one, just go watch ballet or something. I don't know what to
go
tell
watch
you.
Squid Game.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what to tell you. There's not much else to, you know, like you said. I mean, at the end of the day, the proof is right. The evidence is blatant. It's right in front of you. You've seen it for 4 weeks in a row. They've turned the switch when they had to in games they played bad. They've put the pedal to the metal against good football teams that they've been able to put in the rearview mirror. So last week was an indication that they are clicking on all cylinders. When you look at teams, even like the Chiefs and the Broncos, they are not where they want to be, which is why they're not in my top five. And the Cardinals are, you know, they are right now, they are just, they look like a team that's kind of been in the mix for 3 or 4 years, you know, just, but
yes.
Man, really impressive what they're doing so far. And, you know, even though my Browns are great, I'm glad that the Cardinals are way out here on the West Coast. We play them in a couple weeks. I'll obviously be rooting for my Browns, but man, do I have kind of a special play. I love watching this team play, and I like following great. Them. I like Kyler Murray. So, you know, I don't feel guilty for that.
To recap, for me, 1 to 5, Cardinals, Chargers, Chiefs, Packers, Bills. Jason, recap your 5.
Cardinals, Bills, Packers, Chargers, Ravens.
Tomorrow night, we won't be on the air, suffice to say.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to talk about Thursday night football because we got 2 minutes left here to kind of hatch this out. This might be one of the best games you will have all season on Thursday night football. And I'm glad it happened early because both these teams are healthy. Both these teams are going into this with something to play for. It is the Rams and the Seahawks on Thursday night football. I would hate to use the term must win. I would hate to use the term statement game. These things are both for both these teams. The Rams were riding high and everybody was buying tickets to the Rams party. Everybody was buying tickets off the bus for the Seahawks. All that could change after tomorrow night. Obviously, we won't be on air, so let's hatch this out right now. Who do you have tomorrow, Seahawks or Rams?
Oh, man, this is a tough one. This is one that, you know, the Rams have to win. I think the Rams have to win this game because you don't want to lose really? 2 games in 4 days and then have 10 days staring at you after the start you just had. So Seahawks coming off a nice big win. Yes, obviously every game is important. You want to win them. Seahawks are in that situation. So, you know, I'm going to give the Rams one more chance here. I'm going to call the Rams in a close one, 4-3-point, 4-point game. I think that they just kind of hit a buzzsaw Sunday. I think McVay's a good enough coach to learn from some of that stuff. And I'm going to give him another chance and them another chance to make up for it. But if they don't win, wow, is that really putting them behind the eight ball in that division? Especially, like I said, 2 losses that short a time, 10 days to think about it isn't good.
I'm picking the Seahawks. I'm picking the Seahawks for this reason and this reason only. Neither team has a run game. And I think Pete Carroll is smart enough. I know this idea, whole let Russ cook thing. I get it. I hear it. I don't like it, but whatever. Didn't work last year. I don't think it'll work this year. The Rams' run defense has been abysmal. not just last game, roughly all season. The Colts ran on them. For the parts, the Bears actually did run the ball. They ran on them. The 49ers ran all over them. I think, the Cardinals ran all over them. So in a division where three of the four teams are heavy, or two of the four teams are heavy run, I think this is going to play a huge part in who wins the division. I think the Seahawks are going to be smart enough on that coaching staff to say, if we run the ball, we, one, keep the ball out of their hands, and two, we can wear this defense down because it only has two players on it. I can't keep saying that enough. Aaron Donald is great. Yes. So is the corner, Jalen Ramsey. After that, it's a bunch of nobodies. It's a bunch of, oh, this guy could and this guy could. There's no staples. I'm picking the Seahawks. I'm glad you're picking the Rams.
That'll be our $2 bet.
There we go. Boom. Next
$2 bet. So I'm up $2, and this is our two. This is your double or nothing, or I.
We're talking GMs. We come back. Browner and Lawhead. Welcome back to Browner and Lawhead here on the Mightier 1090. Once again, I'm John Browner. I'm joined by Jason Lawhead. If you want to see anything that you may have missed on the first half of the show, we talked power rankings. We talked about everybody being winners from the Red Sox-Yankees game last night. Just the beauty and the pageantry of energy of baseball being back in the stands and on your television. Second half of the pod, we got losers and we've got power rankings, but we're going to do, not power rankings, I'm sorry. We've got buy or sell. I don't know what we got. I'll figure it out down the road. I'm mixing myself up right now. But you can do all that on YouTube if you missed it. You can do all on the podcast if you missed it in the first half. Jason, what's up? I'm clearly, something happened on my screen and I got completely turned upside down. What's going on, bro?
All right, so we're going to start the second segment, and I've got the loser for today. And, you know, yes, you said earlier the winners were all of us, right? The fans at home, the fans in Fenway, all the fans eager to see more playoff games. But I'll tell you, the loser from last night was a guy all by himself on an island on a mound out there in Fenway named Garrett Cole. And I'll tell you what, it's looking more and more like the Yankees just paid $324 million for a lump of coal, because you look at this Yankee team, they're in trouble. This guy's locked down forever at 36 million a year. Giancarlo Stanton, those two guys right now make up 31% of that Yankee payroll. Judge, his 10 million's going into arbitration. That's going to be about 30 million. Aroldis Chapman's due another 16 million. They've got Rizzo going to free agency. Urshela, Torres and Sanchez, all their whatever between 5 and 7 million, that's all going into arbitration. Britton was a flop. He's going into free agency. I mean, Kluber's going into free agency, but he can't start more than, you know, a dozen games a year anymore at his age. He's better off going into the back of the bullpen. If anybody's going to sign this guy, they are in real trouble. Yeah, they can keep spending all this money, but if Garrett Cole is the only guy in your rotation and he's making what a pitching rotation basically costs by himself, the Yankees, you know, and you know, we talked a little bit about the playoff format and everything, but hey, look, at the end of the day, when you're spending $228 million, 92 wins ain't enough, because if it was the old rule, you ain't even playing a one game playoff. 92 wins isn't getting you into the postseason unless there's a one-game playoff, at least in this format. So Yankee Garrett Cole is kind of carrying that whole loss on his shoulders, even with the mistakes, you know, they made with Stanton hitting the, you know, sending Judge. I mean, they made more outs at home plate this year than any team in baseball. That was a staggering stat I learned last night. So the Yankees have a lot of just issues, and $228 million isn't going to fix it. They're kind of a metaphor of the United States in the last 20 years, you know, just keep throwing a bunch of money and look like you're big and strong and mighty, but there's just holes in the ship everywhere.
You know, that's interesting you say that. I have a problem with baseball. You can't win unless you pay big. You just can't. The last five World Series champions, with the exception of one being the Astros, we're all in the top 10 in payroll. I think four of those teams were in the top five of payroll. A couple of times it was the number one team in payroll, being the Dodgers and the Yankees. I think the Red Sox were in there too. This is a baseball issue, man. This is a baseball issue. Yes, they paid these guys a lot of money. Yes, they're cap strapped or financially strapped because there's no cap. But this is the only way to run a baseball team and be successful on a continuous basis. The Yankees have had continuous success, not world champion, not World Series success. But they've had continued success because they pay what it costs. Now, they probably outbid themselves for Gerrit Cole, which they tend to do as well. But if you have endless amounts of money, you have an unlimited stream pouring into you because of the Yes Network, spend the money. Like, again, if I'm a Yankee fan, I want you to fix this. We don't have a farm system because we trade for actual real live baseball players. We don't worry about the farm system because we are actually using our farm system to get guys. And then when we trade for a guy and he's successful with us, we sign him. They're going to sign Anthony Rizzo. They're going to because he's good. He provides a need for them. What's going to happen after that, like you said, with these arbitration things, I don't know. But if the money goes up, they can afford it. If Gerrit Cole sucks again next year, they can afford it. What I don't want in baseball is rich guys telling me they ain't got it. Because for now, you know what's happening? You know what's happening in Chicago? The Cubs are telling you they ain't got it. And we all know that's a lie. That market, that team can't tell you they ain't got it. When they are building a gambling site attached to the stadium, they ain't got it. So what I hear what you're saying, but I disagree with the idea that spending money doesn't end in success in baseball because the stats tell you it does. And by stats, I mean the amount of money spent year after year, and the teams that show up in the playoffs and in the World Series would differ with you.
Well, I'm just saying who they're spending it on. I don't disagree with the amount, you know, looking at the intangibles to say, hey, if we want to be competitive year in and year out and try to be in a World Series, we're going to have to, you know, be one of the top spenders. And other teams that did get those World Series championships, some of them just decided how they were going to spend, right? Chicago being one. The Cubs went and said, we're going to spend this much money over these many years. And they went out and got one. And then they went and trended differently. And then another cycle will come where they will spend that money. Same with the Royals. Small market. Now, they knew they had built something, so they made a little bit of a financial splash. They weren't in the top five in payroll the year they won it. But they shot themselves a lot more ahead of what they usually would spend for that 2-year window, 3-year window, and they got a World Series championship out of it. Okay, there's a few exceptions. You know, the Rays keep getting there with a smaller payroll. Right. The Indians for a long time until this year were elbowing their way around with a medium to smaller payroll. But I'm talking about the Yankees are in trouble for who and where they're spending their money. After Judge, and if they do sign Rizzo, you're going to have four guys making probably over 50% of your payroll, and you're still getting guys like Aaron Hicks, who didn't even hit 200 this year. He's going to make $12.5 million next year. Ochoka, you know, this guy hit 190-something. He's going to make $13 million next year. What I'm saying is they're just throwing cash everywhere, and they don't even know if they're going to get results for it. And some of the better young players that are heading into arbitration that are going to want to be like, hey man, give me mine. Or Shella, somebody said, I've been, you know, reliable. I'm over here at third hitting, getting big hits. Sanchez, your catcher, whoever else, Torres, other infielders, they've got a problem. Also, they've got no top of the order or no bottom of the order. And the middle of the order is leading off, they're a mess. One starting pitcher and three hitters that are in the wrong spot in the order.
Strategy, they may be actually be in trouble, but when it comes to money, they can pay their way out of that strategy. Let's talk buy or sell. Mm-hmm. The NBA GM survey came out, and in this survey, this is when the NBA goes around and surveys all the GMs about what's going to happen next year, who they think is going to win a championship, who's going to win the Eastern Conference, the Western Conference, most improved player. You get the drift. So instead of us doing buy and sell going into the football week, we're going to do buy or sell going into the NBA season. According to the GM survey, We're going to do meaty things. We're going to talk the bulk of the situation. We're going to go with players first. According to the NBA GM survey, I don't even, the fact that it's called the Kia MVP award really bothers me. But I'm not even going
to. I know.
Yeah, I love the NBA. But if you're going to associate with something with the most valuable player, Kia, I know they paid for it. I would rather just MVP, not Kia. Just take Kia off of it. Like what? Anyway. Kevin Durant, Luka Doncic, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Joel Embiid, James Harden, Steph Curry. Last year, obviously, Giannis was the winner in this survey by 32%, and he actually won the award. No, Jokic won the award. I'm sorry.
Jokic.
Jason, are you buying or selling at 37% that Kevin Durant will be the MVP?
I am. I'm gonna sell on that. I think that there's gonna be enough kind of turbulence in Brooklyn. I mean, he's a great player. He's gonna be Kevin Durant. I'm not saying that, but I think there'll be enough turbulence in Brooklyn in and around that situation where you know it's kind of an EKG of what's going on with their season throughout the year. Here's who I'm going with. If I'm a GM, I'm calling Damian Lillard the league MVP this year. I think with Chauncey coming in and some areas that Portland has, you know, their sights on, I think they've learned a lot from the opponents in the West in the last few years. I like Lillard. So I'm going to sell KD as this year's league MVP, even though he's, you know, a first team all NBA, or I'm not saying he's not going to have an MVP type year, but I just think little intangibles, little things are going to swing it towards Damian Lillard.
That's so funny that he didn't even make the list. I think that's a great pick by you. At 37%, am I buying Kevin Durant? I got to tell you, and everybody knows I love Kevin Durant. He's my favorite player to, he's my second favorite player to watch. My first is Steph Curry. I got to tell you, I think Steph Curry is going to be the MVP. I thought he should have won it last year because of what he was able to do. They didn't finish well. They made it to the skunky playoff situation that was they got involved in. But Steph Curry showed you the magnitude of what he could do. I think with Klay Thompson coming back sometime probably around Christmas, maybe a little bit after that, maybe after the All-Star break, with the addition of James Wiseman in the second year, with Jonathan Kuminga, who looks like he is a man out there, with Jordan Poole shooting the ball, the way he shot the ball, I think that Steph Curry is going to repeat his success of last year. And if that team can find a way to maneuver and get a guy like Ben Simmons added to that roster, or get Andrew Wiggins, who's now vaccinated, congratulations, to do more, I think Steph Curry is going to have this team in the top four in the Western Conference, and that top four seeding will allow people to say, wait, he's averaging what? And then you look at that roster and you go, who else is on that roster? Oh, my God. Yeah, this guy's the MVP. So I like it. I like Steph Curry as the MVP, so he's going to be who I'm buying. I'm selling Kevin Durant as the MVP.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I like that. I like that evaluation. I loved the year Steph had last year. I even said on Twitter during the year, this was probably for Steph individually the best season he's had, even though they had the great 71 year. But for Steph, for what he was up against, he had to face a real challenge last year for the first time, not having some bodies around him. And I thought he played great. I thought he consistently played great, not just some games great. But the big key is going to be where do they land in the standings for him to win the MVP. And I think for them to land at 4 or 5, you're going to have to see huge growth from Wiggins and Wiseman. And if you do, that'll be on Steph as well. And I think he'll get a really good shot at winning the MVP. And I really do. I like that that Lillard, Steph, that ability, those kind of players to go out and lift their teams to win the MVP as opposed to a KD or a LeBron that'll kind of just, you know, those teams kind of roll the ball out and we expect them to win a lot of games and be at the top of their conference.
Eastern Conference rankings, according to the GM survey, Brooklyn, Milwaukee, Miami, Philadelphia, Atlanta, Boston, Indiana. I'm not going to ask you to give it to me in that order. Mm-hmm. What I will ask you is, are you buying or selling Brooklyn will finish number one in the Eastern Conference?
Wow. I'm going to sell it because I just don't know if they're going to be a regular season built team, especially with the Kyrie stuff. I mean, I still think when the boat went in less than 2 weeks, when they go ready to tip off, there's no way he's not going to at least get to the stages of vaccination. I mean, maybe he will, then he's just a weirdo, but I don't think that the Nets necessarily need Kyrie with what they've got, especially if LaMarcus Aldridge comes in and can really be a factor. Look, Boston proved that Kyrie ain't just bringing you a championship, right?
Right.
So I think that that's the kind of season they're going to have. I still like Milwaukee as that everlasting, you know, high 50, low 60, mid 60 win team. I think they're built more for the regular season than all the other teams in the East. I wouldn't be surprised if a Heat team snuck in there. And just consistently played night after night with the way Spoelstra's experience is and knowing how to navigate a regular season, getting Kyle Lowry, if he has a big all-star year with the pieces they have. So, I don't know. I think the Nets are one of those kind of cruise control teams that knows that, hey, it's time for the playoffs and let's be healthy and ready for that.
I'm selling this, and I'm selling this real hard, and I'm selling this real fast. The Nets are not going to be the number one team in the Eastern Conference. It's going to be Milwaukee, because what you said was perfect. The regular season doesn't matter to the Nets. They're not going to be eighth. They're going to be like third or fourth, mm-hmm. and that's all they really need. That's all I really care about. They just need to get in. This Kyrie situation has – if I'm Sean Marks, I'm not going to play around with this guy, man. I'm going to Kevin Durant. I'm going to James Harden. I'm sitting down with them together – and I'm going to say, listen, you guys love Kyrie. We love Kyrie. As an organization, we can't have this. This is a massive distraction. And I know we want to wait till the season starts, but what's going to be next? He took 2 weeks off in the middle of the year because there was a country blew a bomb up somewhere. Like, we can't count on this guy. We know you guys love him, but this is a business. And after this, you guys can be best friends with him. I don't give a damn what you do with him. He can't play for us anymore. So I've traded him to fill in the blank, follow up, whatever. No thanks. That's why we won't win the number one seed in the East. Let's go West. GM survey. Lakers, Utah, Phoenix, Denver, Golden State, the Clippers, Dallas, Portland. Wow, okay. Buy or sell, the Lakers will win the Western Conference.
I'm going to sell that too. I think it's they're going to be a lot like that net kind of attitude. And I think when you look, when these teams and you get players that have won championships before and they've been deep in the playoffs, like both of those teams have, like we said, they realize like now in the East, there's so many teams motivated to get better than they were last year. The right. Hawks, the Knicks, the Heat, you know, good teams that have purpose to go out and try to win a lot of regular season games. And in the West, it's always a battle for seeding. It's always just, hey, we could have the best year we've had in years and still be the 7 or 8 seed. So we really got to play well. So I think it's going to be more of a Utah-Denver. I mean, I'm selling the Lakers. I don't know really who to buy until I start watching a little bit more. But I would definitely say I would lean towards a Denver, a Utah, to be that kind of a team, to be the best record in the West. And I still think, you know, Portland's going to surprise a lot of people this year and win a lot of basketball games. You know, because I think Terry Stotts was a good enough coach to make a program get to where it needs to, another voice and another inspiration. I think Chauncey's perfect.
I'm going to sell this because I believe Utah is more built for the regular season to be mm-hmm. successful in that way. I think the Los Angeles Lakers are going to be, if I'm not mistaken, the oldest team to start a season in NBA history, which is absolutely baffling. But I don't think they're going to do good in the regular season. I think it'll be entertaining, but I think those bodies, those legs, the minutes, the games that are on those guys' backs, Russell Westbrook, LeBron James, the fragile body of Anthony Davis, the hit and miss of Carmelo Anthony, the goofiness of Dwight Howard. I don't know.
They're going to play their best regular season basketball from the start to Christmas, right?
Yep.
You get a bunch of older guys engaged, wanting to get out there, da-da-da-da-da. And they're going to play their best regular season basketball in the last 2 weeks when they figure out where they want to be and what seed they're going to fall at, because the middle of all that's just going to be a lot of junk. Guys taking days off. You're going to get some guys on a 15 day. I mean, if you think Carmelo Anthony's going to dress for all 82 games or some of these guys, I just don't see all that happening. Davis is going to get rest. LeBron's going to get rest. So, yeah, they're just a bookend regular season team because they know pretty much with what they've got, that's all it really takes. And then they'll find their way and try to be the team they want to be come April.
Last topic, less than two minutes. Who will win the NBA Finals? According to the GM survey, an overwhelming 72% say the Brooklyn Nets, followed by the Los Angeles Lakers and the Milwaukee Bucks. Last year it was the Lakers at 81%. For them to only have three teams up there, I find that to be very, very interesting considering the way it shook out last year. Jason, buying or selling? Who wins the NBA championship?
I'm selling. I think the Bucks repeat. I think that was a really big indicator how they plowed through that Eastern Conference final and that finals against a Brooklyn team that was a toe shot away from taking it from them. But they, you know, Giannis got hurt during that series in the middle of it. And then they had to still try to forge their way through a Suns team that was playing so well. I mean, that Suns postseason record was they only lost a couple games going into that final series. And then they jumped out to that lead on Milwaukee. I like the Bucks to repeat.
I think the Nets are going to win the NBA championship because I believe they have the two of the top five players in the league that won't be stopped when the time comes. James Harden never gets hurt. He unfortunately got hurt last year, but I think KD rises to the occasion. I think he's accompanied by James Harden, and I have no idea what they do with Kyrie Irving. We will only find out, and we may have to find out at another time because we're out of time here. Brown and Lawhead, peace.
Have a great week.